Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Welcome to FST. Thanks for joining us on Thursday. Wednesday. I jumped ahead of it.
Yeah, get ahead of yourself.
Yeah, geez. We've got all kinds of action, obviously, tomorrow on Thursday. But today, we got a couple of cool things to talk about. I know many of you are out there drafting. I got another draft tonight, another draft tomorrow. So I got another one Sunday. I'm all jammed up. I overcommitted, Dane. I said I would do it, but I am. It's Mike Blewett here with Dane Martinez on Fantasy Sports Today. Hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. Dane is at Spittin' Speeds. That's S-P-E-E-D-Z. And we'll be taking calls a little bit later in the hour. I'll give out that number when it's appropriate. We will have a guest today. That is Colin Drew from Sports Grid, works for Sports Grid. You know him typically as a guy that writes for DailyRoto.com. And obviously, we are connected with Daily Roto, and I highly recommend all of their advice. Colin can be found on Twitter at Drewby, D-R-E-W-B-Y, 417. So we'll talk to him. He wrote a good article about stacking. When it comes to DFS, his focus is DFS. He writes NFL, NBA, some PGA as well. He does some podcasts regarding the PGA tournaments as well. That's slowing down this time of year, but still, he did a really nice. He's been examining the stacking phenomenon in DFS for the last couple of years, and he did kind of an update to the NFL DFS stacking, how you can attack it, what are the smart strategies. So we'll talk, if any of you are interested in DFS and that article, I suggest that you listen to it. I suggest that everybody listens to it because it's pretty smart, and I like some of the takeaways from there. Anyway, we'll talk to him in 15 minutes or so. But first of all, Dane, a couple of news and notes for us to get to. And the first one is Alshon Jeffrey. Alshon Jeffrey to miss at least two games. And that is obviously good news for our team that we just drafted in terms of Nelson Agholor, but clearly bad news for Philly and bad news for Alshon Jeffrey owners, people that have drafted him to this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Our folks over at Inside Injuries were talking about this. There were reports last week about Alshon Jeffrey missing more than the two games and maybe even being an early season pup guy who would be the first six games at least. And here's the thing for me, Blewett. Alshon Jeffrey, last year was the anomaly when he stayed healthy. He has had a long history of soft tissue injuries, and those are, you know, not the freak kind of injuries that just happen, not like the Keenan Allen, like ruptured spleen kind of injuries. He's had a number of those soft tissue injuries, so he's always been an injury risk for me. Anyway, I think this definitely bumps up Nelson Agholor. This creates some interest for me in a guy like Mike Wallace, who might step in there as a number, as another receiver. You know, people have been talking about Mac Hollins. I don't think it's as much Mac Hollins. He's been banged up as well. But here's what I do think it means. I think it means you boost up Zach Ertz, although where else were you going to boost him? He's number three. I think he remains number three, but I'm just more confident in him, maybe getting the most targets on this team. But the other thing I would note, especially Blewett, because Jay Ajayi is still dealing with injuries, don't forget about Darren Sproles as an option out of the backfield, okay? And I think especially early on in the season when Jeffrey is still out, when, you know, Ajayi is potentially struggling with the knee or the lower body, I'm interested in Sproles, and I like what this does for Ertz and Agholor, and it may make me get a little bit of a look to Mike Wallace as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the tough part for me for Philly throughout this preseason is knowing whom to bet on. Last year, Zach Ertz, 74 catches, 824 yards, 8 touchdowns. Jeffrey, 57 for 789. On 120 targets, it's really not that impressive, except for the fact that he got into the end zone 9 times. They're a very high-octane offense. They scored a lot. But really, Nelson Agholor had very similar numbers, 62 for 768 and 8 touchdowns on only 95 targets. He's actually a more efficient player than was Jeffrey. Mike Wallace last year, not for Philly, but he had 52 catches for 748 and 4 scores. So there was already going in a little bit of a head-scratching situation as to how these were going to be spread out, and much of that came without Darren Sproles, who's a known pass catcher in that offense. So my approach to the Philly offense is I wasn't going to own much of it unless Ertz fell or unless Agholor got to a point that I felt comfortable with. I would submit that I think Agholor has an opportunity to be a wide receiver three. Wide receiver two would be an aggressive projection. I don't think he'll get quite that high, but he's being drafted as a wide receiver four right now, so I do think there's potential. And now, obviously, with Jeffrey being out for at least a couple of games, the mixed bag of news is that he's not going on the PUP, so he's not missing six games. They think he could return for week three, but it looks like it could be somewhere between two and four if you're reading the tea leaves, not six. So if you do have Jeffrey, that's the silver lining inside the massive cloud of news. So anyway, Agholor was the guy that I was trying to extract some value out of because I thought we were getting him at a reasonable price. Now, you and I drafted him the other day. He'll need to be that wide receiver three because we have Gronk, and that obviously pushed down the manner in which we could take some top-end wide receivers.
Yeah, absolutely. We currently, Blewett, have him in our flex spot, which is good because we have Mark Ingram out for the first 4 weeks. But I like where we stand there. I think this does push Agholor with no Jeffrey there into the wide receiver three conversation. And, you know, another wide receiver that we have, Mike, who I think is going to definitely outperform his ADP. It looks like Manny Sanders is potentially going to be a favorite target of Case Keenum, doing a lot of things. He's healthy. I expect a bounce back from Manny Sanders. So I'm okay with Manny Sanders and Nelson Agholor. You know, even I think these guys are both going to be a little bit ahead of Randall Cobb, who's our other wide receiver in that mix. Therefore, our team, I really like our depth. The one thing I'll say about Philly, Mike, is, you know, I think you've heard me before. I have the term the fantasy herd. Okay, and the Philadelphia Eagles are a great representation. You just talked about three or four guys, right, who had kind of similar numbers. And the thing is, you know, they're great for the Philadelphia Eagles, right? Being able to give Carson Wentz or Nick Foles the ability to kind of spread the ball around, identify the mismatch at the line, read the mail with the defense, as it were. But that is frustrating for the fantasy team because 1 week, Zach Ertz is going to win a week. 1 week, you know, Nelson Agholor is going to have two touchdowns. 1 week, Mike Wallace will get behind the defense. And 1 week, Darren Sproles is going to catch eight balls. So that's why I call it a fantasy herd because, you know, they are kind of like the herd. I take the shepherd in that situation. I think other situations like this are in Detroit, you know, and in L.A. with the Rams and those three wide receivers, Woods, Cooks, and Kupp is a similar kind of thing. I call it the fantasy herd, and what you detailed, Mike, right there is a perfect example of why Philadelphia is a fantasy herd, in my opinion.
Yeah, I have had a hard time targeting anybody there because I do think they'll continue to spread around in the manner that it was spread around last year. So I'll take one or two guys if I can get them at value. And like I said, that's mainly been Ertz and Agholor. Sproles is interesting to me, but I have not pulled the trigger on that yet. Some other quick news and notes. Le'Veon Bell denies he'll be back on Labor Day. I got to be honest. I don't know what to say. He's going to be back for week one. He's basically said that. The fact that somebody tried to pinpoint the exact day that he's coming back, I think, is what irritated him in some way. So he'll be back for week one. I think you can expect a slow start like you did last year, but there's usually enough volume that it's not going to bury you in any of those weeks. But you know what? If he exploded from week one on, that wouldn't surprise me either. So we don't need to talk too much about him. He's a top two pick. George Kittle back at practice Tuesday. That's good news for me. I have Kittle in a couple of leagues. His first practice since going down with a separated shoulder in their preseason opener.
Yeah, listen, remember I told you before in my main home league, I had three tight ends at value, Ertz in the 7th, Burton in the 12th, and Kittle was the 3rd in the 17th. Blewett, I did wind up flipping Kittle for some draft picks because I didn't want to roster three tight ends. You know, I moved up a little bit in the draft, and that helped me out for, you know, whatever, the settings and the craziness of my long-time 15-year home league.
Does that guy get Kittle, to Does that guy get to keep Kittle at that depressed?
Yes, he keeps Kittle in the 17th. Yes, okay. He keeps Kittle in the 17th. Yes, okay. Because we made the trade before the keeper declaration deadline.
And
okay,
year,
so he, can,
year
he takes
over
it as
year,
that asset.
What is the round association? Does it move up two rounds?
Yeah, it escalates. It escalates. It depends. I mean, we could get into it, but it's something like up until round round 12 and beyond goes up four. From rounds like 9 to 12 goes up three, then two, then one. And like eventually that. It goes from one if you keep a guy in the first round and then the following year you want to keep him again. And that was done with a couple of people. This year it costs you a first and a sixth. That was done for Antonio Brown and Ezekiel Elliott this year.
Not as expensive, but
it is. But I mean, for some of those top guys, I wind up having my studs. I have Lev Bell in the first. I have DeAndre Hopkins in the second. My best. I got Stephon Diggs, Mike, in the sixth round, and Zach Ertz in the seventh. Those are my big time values, and then I'm going to go to war with my third, fourth, and fifth round picks.
I mean, effectively, you're giving up a sixth round pick for the right of keeping those guys. It doesn't matter.
Exactly.
You're, quote, giving up a first rounder. They are first round picks. So you're
they
not
are first
up
round
anything. Right. So I have a situation in our league. Alvin Kamara is being kept in the ninth round. So
yeah,
not by
awesome.
Me, unfortunately, but somebody scooped him last year. You know, I probably was asleep at the wheel in that draft, but I should have scooped Kamara before that. I didn't. So let's keep going.
Mike, in this league, I'm targeting Darius Geis. You know, I'm targeting Darius Geis in this league. I'm targeting Hunter Henry in this league. You know what I mean? Just for stashing next year. That's how we got to do it in these long-term keeper leagues.
Adam Thielen banged up with a leg injury. Everybody thinks he'll be okay. The Bengals gave out $110 million to two defensive players, Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap. So they'll be on the team through 2021 and 2022, respectively. Le'Veon Bell not expected to be limited. Baldwin saying that he estimates his knee is going to be about 80 to 85% this season. He doubts it'll ever be 100%. That's surprising honesty, but he's honest about it. So what can I say? Like that, he put it out on the line that he's not going to be 100%. I don't think it's an excuse-making thing. I think he's just being honest about where he's at, and he's going to have to manage his pain throughout the year. They'll probably have to manage practices on him throughout the year. And the last one is Sony Michel, running back coach Ivan Fears was impressed with Sony Michel after his return to practice on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, remember, we've said this a lot, okay? First-round running backs that get drafted, the organization has designs on them for the future. You know, whether it's Ronald Jones in Tampa, Rashad Penny in Seattle, or Sony Michel in New England. I said it yesterday, Mike, I really believe, and you kind of like halfway bought it, although you pushed it back, you kicked the can down the road until next year. I really believe at some point, you know, Belichick is not stupid, okay? He is planning for the swan songs of Tom Brady. We knew he was doing it with the quarterback position with Jimmy G and Jacoby Brissett, and we've talked about that story. I really believe that whether it's this year or next year, the Patriots are going to do similar things to what we've seen out of the New Orleans Saints to take some of the load off of Drew Brees, and I think Sony Michel was a big piece of why they did it, Also, the kid out of Georgia, the offensive lineman, Wynn, that they drafted, unfortunately, he's already gone down. I think they may evolve to less of an air raid attack and using this running game some more. I think that Sony Michel is a very interesting value because he's dropped because of the knee procedure. And now we're not going to see him in the last week of the preseason, right? So he's going to be an unknown. He's going to be an unknown in drafts that have a little red kind of note or a little red cross next to his name. So people are going to avoid him. I love the value of Sony Michel. That's why we got him on our team.
Yeah, no doubt. So speaking of the Patriots, big news on the DFS and sports betting front. Patriots owner Rob Kraft and Cowboys owner Jerry Jones are retaining their DraftKings stakes amid shift to sports books. Now, here's the bottom line. They've retained their investments in DraftKings, and it is potentially controversial as the NFL stance against sports betting is that they want nothing to do with it. There are technical bylaws in here, which we can review slightly, but the reality is two prominent NFL owners, some might consider the two most prominent NFL owners, are all in on a company that is shifting to sports gambling. Now, their stakes are said to be small, less than 5%, and in a court disclosure, 21st Century Fox was the only company listed as owning 10% or more of DraftKings. So they are minority owners, but owners nonetheless. So, and the reason that those Cowboys spokesman said Jones' investment in DraftKings is through sports hospitality company Legends, not the Cowboys themselves. So Jones and the Steinbrenners, owners of the Yankees, have been described as principal owners of Legends. I think we all know that that was a joint venture set up a few years ago, basically when the new Yankee Stadium was opening. So the Patriots are not commenting. NFL spokesman Brian McCarthy told ESPN in an email that current league policy, quote, enables personnel to own equity interest in an entity that generates less than a third of its revenue from gambling-related operations, which is the case now because DraftKings is primarily a DFS company. However, there is a shift, obviously, with them offering online gambling right now, online sports betting in the state of New Jersey. Other states like Mississippi and what's the third state? Delaware have open sports books, but New Jersey right now is the only state in which you can use DraftKings to play some sports bets. So I laid all that out. I'll let you comment.
Sure. I think it's very interesting. I'm going to take it slightly in a different direction. Listen, I've known that the teams, the networks, the leagues are in bed with, you know, DraftKings, FanDuel, these DFS sites. They have been for a while. You see even places like ESPN starting to put up the betting lines. It's all going in this way. And, you know, I think it's silly to kind of think that Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft are going to kind of take their hand out of the cookie jar, you know, because of this regulation. What I do think is interesting, though, is there was a lot of blowback. Also last week, Richard Sherman, a player, decided to get involved and establish his own DFS site, right? And there was a lot of blowback for Sherman kind of getting ahead of this. You know, the players wanted to make money, but I think it's interesting that, you know, the response to the players kind of getting their piece of the pie in this way as businessmen around DFS or gambling is somehow viewed differently than the owners, than the guys in the boardroom doing the same thing with their business sense. And I've seen different responses when it comes to the players trying to get involved on the business side from the owners trying to get involved in the business side. Kraft, Jerry Jones, the NFL itself, they have been in bed with these websites for a long time, so this is not news to me. What I do think is interesting is how response compares to when it's player trying to go out and be a businessman and get his money as well.
The Steelers a while back, and I can't remember what year it was, but several Rooney brothers and family, parts of the family tree, owned portions of the Steelers, but several of them had to divest their investment in the Steelers because they also owned racetracks. And it was deemed to be, based on that bylaw, the money earned from the racetrack was significant enough percentage that they had to divest their ownership in the Steelers. So it became more an aggregated ownership for Dan Rooney and his son. So anyway, I just thought it was an interesting story. We talk a lot about DFS and lines and sports betting, so I thought it was an interesting piece of news, and it could be very contentious between Jerry Jones, Bob Kraft, and Roger Goodell as we move forward. We got Colin Drew when we come back. We're talking DFS stacking on FNTSY right after this.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Back on Fantasy Sports Today. Thanks for joining us on TuneIn, on iHeartRadio, on a variety of terrestrial radio stations across the country, and on the Fantasy Sports Radio app. Thanks for joining us today. Hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. And we got Colin Drew coming in here in a minute to talk about DFS and stacking strategies. But first, since he's a member of the Daily Roto team, DailyRoto.com is putting more than $25,000 on the line for its subscribers this NFL season, entering paid contests on FanDuel and bringing you along for the free roll. Have the chance to win big this year along Sports Grid CEO Jeremy Stein, one of the only men to have won two separate $1 million prizes. Come on, Colin, step it up. Each week, we'll select lucky subscribers to sweat with us and split 50% of the profits. No profits that week? No worries. Your name will get tossed back into the hat the following week. Head to dailyroto.com/sweat and learn how to get in on the action and share your share of $25,000 in action. That's dailyroto.com/sweats. Kyle, why don't you get $3 million prizes, and then you're in the ad and not Jeremy?
I know. I gotta chip away at it. You know, I gotta start with my first one. So hopefully we can put some of this stacking stuff to use this fall. I can get my first one and then start chipping away at number two and three.
That's what I'm talking about. See, setting goal. It's about goal setting, and I can appreciate that you're going for $3 million prizes this season. I'm going to hold you to that, too. So this is Colin Drew. He does product and marketing for us at Sports Grid, but he writes about NFL, PGA, NHL. You can find him on Twitter at Drewby, 417. That's Drewby, 417. So Colin and I were talking a couple of weeks back, and I said I wanted to have him on the show, and this article was a perfect opportunity. So you can go to dailyroto.com and find an article on NFL DFS stacking strategy. And this one, I like the way it's built up, because you've obviously been tracking this strategy for a while, and you discovered some things in your previous articles and previous sort of look at this strategy, which is that as QB price increases, we need to increase the number of weapons we stack with our quarterback. So you're two times as likely to hit 4x value by running three-man stacks than you are running two-man stacks plus a non-correlated wide receiver. So basically, if you're going to do a stack, especially with a high-end quarterback, you need to have two of his weapons, not just one, and go in another direction, correct?
Yeah, definitely. And that's, you know, for people who are newer to DFS and to the game, stacking is typically when you pair quarterback with either a wide receiver or a tight end. And it's been something that's been a common strategy to win tournaments for the last several years. So stacking alone is something that's kind of been widely covered, and most experienced DFS players know that they need to stack. But what I wanted to do was definitely dive in a level deeper, and I've done that over the past couple of years. And I think the good example is, you know, with the QB price increases, if you think about a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, you're never going to get him for, you know, $6,000 on FanDuel or cheaper than that on DraftKings. You're really not. So if he's going to deliver value for a really lofty salary, that means he's going to have to score 3, 4, maybe even 5 touchdowns, and in order to separate himself from some of those cheaper QBs who throw 3 touchdowns. And if he does that, he's definitely going to have multiple wide receivers on his team that are scoring those touchdowns with him. And I think that pairing up multiple wide receivers with the quarterback is a strong way to go. I also think in some of the high game total games, you know, when you get the totals above 47, above 50 points, that you also want to consider bringing it back with a player from the other team and hoping that that game shoots out.
Fair enough. We're talking with Colin Drew here from DailyRoto.com right here on Fantasy Sports Today. Hey, Colin, this is Dane Martinez, Speeds and Statistician. I wanted to ask you, because stacking is kind of a boom or bust strategy, right? I mean, you just said with an Aaron Rodgers, let's say it's the game that they kind of put up 10 points as an offense, then you're kind of screwed. That being said, is this less of a strategy in cash games or 50-50s where you may want to just spread your investment around a little bit on different teams? Or does it not matter? Do you recommend stacking if you're 50-50 or tournaments?
Yeah, it's definitely a tournament strategy. So it's kind of Ricky Bobby, if you're not first, you're last. The prize pools are so top heavy. You're competing against thousands of other players. So you really need to be able to separate yourself from the field in tournaments. In cash games, you don't need to worry about stacking one way or another. If you think it's, you know, the optimal way to go because the player's underpriced, I think it's fine to have a stack in there. But you don't need to go out of your way to force it in. I would say in some of the smaller contests, so there are these leagues on FanDuel, which, you know, can range anywhere from 10 to 100 players. And you don't need maybe a full game stack in that type of scenario. A lot of people are just going to be putting their cash game lineups in there. And so if you do just a single quarterback wide receiver stack in there, it provides you a little bit of upside without going kind of crazy as it relates to the game stacking, where, like you said, a lot of times you game stack, it's not going to work out. And in tournaments, that's fine. You're not going to be able to win tournaments every week. You're not going to be able to catch tournaments every week. You're really just hoping to capitalize those one or two times a year when you are right.
So that was the real focus of this article, was game stacks. And you got to a point where you set a baseline as for the return you're looking for, it's player scoring over 16.5 points on FanDuel, over 20 points on DraftKings, which is where how you get into the range of potentially winning some tournaments if you're getting 20-plus point performances from your whole team. So the interesting thing is that there's definitely a threshold by which you can consider this a successful strategy. So when it comes to a game stack, meaning you're picking, let's say I'm just going to the week one schedule, you're going to Bucks Saints because you think the Bucks defense is going to stink. Saints are going to light them up in New Orleans. Maybe that's your game stack, and you're going to go with Drew Brees. You'll take Michael Thomas. You'll take, let's say, Ted Ginn, and then you want to go with an opposing wide receiver. So let's just call it Mike Evans, right? That would be the example of a game stack, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. That would be one way to go. You know, the Saints will be an interesting one just to monitor the news and the training camp battles, kind of understand who's going to get time at receiver and, you know, the wide receiver two or three position. The other way you could go kind of with that game, if you wanted to be able to pay up for both Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara on the same team, because a lot of people will stack quarterbacks with wide receivers and tight ends. Less people stack with the pass catching running backs, but someone like Kamara is still highly correlated with Breeze. And so you could pay up for all of those Saints players. And then on the other side of the ball, I'll go with someone like Chris Godwin instead of Mike Evans and get kind of the cheaper exposure on the other side of the ball coming back as part of the game stack. But that is what we'd be looking to do. And you definitely pegged one of the best games in week one to do that. I think the other game that'll be a popular target for that will be the San Diego Chargers and the Kansas City Chiefs, and then, of course, the New England Patriots and the Houston Texans.
Yeah. So real quick, Dean, let me just on a quick follow here, because I want to set it up for us to ask our next round of questions. So what is interesting about the game stack percentages is that it gets to a point where if you're stacking four or more players, basically it gets to a threshold where if you're stacking four players in a game, the percentage of games in which that can pay off is 14.7%, which is both limited enough that it makes unique if you're picking the right game, but also high enough that it is relatively successful. For example, if you're trying to go five players, it drops down to 4% of games. So you're really throwing a dart. That's a 1 in 25 chance that you hit it. So it does separate you going with the four or more strategy. Three or more does work too, but at a 36.8% clip. And that means that there's going to be many other people that have a 1 in 3 chance or more of hitting that, correct?
Yeah, and then as you move to the kind of higher game point total games, so you know a total for the game of 47 or above, the three or more goes from the 36% up to 48%. So that does show the viability of attacking some of the higher team totals. Now, obviously, a lot of those players end up a little bit more popular, but when you kind of go with a four or more game stack, you still get the floor of having the three guys that might go off. And maybe one of your guys only puts up 10 points. You're still probably going to be in the cash that week. You might not be at the very top of the leaderboard, but I think that's kind of the threshold for some of the game stacks that I'm looking to target. It definitely varies a little bit by team too, just because, like we said, the kind of expensive passing QBs you want to load up. But if you're going to go cheap at QB with someone like Tyrod Taylor, then you probably don't want to go with a full, you know, Cleveland game stack.
Interesting. Yeah, you guys mentioned some of the stacks that I was looking at. Mike talked about the New Orleans-Tampa game that could, you know, kind of be a high-scoring game. You mentioned the Chargers in Kansas City. I'm going to be attacking this Chiefs pass defense all year long. I think the Chiefs always represent a great stack because their opponent's going to be able to throw on them, and then you know Patty Mahomes is going to sling it back the other way. So that could be interesting. So those were two that I looked at. Another one that I have already as a stack, I've made some lineups on FanDuel already. I have a stack that I think, you know, I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think this offense has looked better than most people think in the preseason. And I think I have also some kind of price value because these guys are, you know, like not as notorious as others. And I'm going away from wide receiver. Colin, I'm going with an Andy Dalton, Tyler Eifert stack. I think that, you know, the chance that I'm going to get Tyler Eifert healthy is only going to happen early in the year. We know we can attack this Indianapolis pass defense in years past, and Andy Dalton has looked good because of the improvements to the offensive line. What do you think about that one? I think, you know, Colts and Bengals could be an interesting game in terms of the over as well.
Yeah, Drew Dinkmeyer did a show with Al Zeidenfeld, and he was actually, who's one of the most successful DFS players, won a millionaire maker himself, and he was kind of keying in on that same game, especially with the Colts secondary being really banged up right mm-hmm. now. So I think that's an interesting way to go, and definitely would, you know, be a way to differentiate early, because Dalton did have a down year last year, but it does look like some of those younger weapons in the passing attack are coming together, and hopefully if Eifert's healthy, that brings them back together too. I definitely
week one's the best chance for that to happen.
Yeah, and I definitely love that Chargers stack too. One of the things that I also, you can kind of read about in the stacking strategy article, which is free on Daily Roto, is that Keenan Allen was such a highly correlated target of Philip Rivers. So 6 out of 7 games that Rivers kind of hit his ceiling, Allen was hitting his ceiling as well. And the predictability of that is really valuable in tournaments, because even someone like Carson Wentz, who had a great season last year, he was spreading the ball around so much that you were kind of playing whack-a-mole, trying to pick which guy was going to go off with him. So having the Rivers-Allen connection as kind of the consistent stack that you know he's going to target is a nice, comfortable thing.
It's funny, we just talked about Philly in the first segment, that it's been difficult to target anybody even in seasonal drafts simply because they spread the ball around so much. He had 8 touchdowns from Ertz. He had 9 for Jeffrey. He had 8 for Aguilar. So it's all well and good. It was a high-octane offense, but the wide receivers didn't even top 65 catches on the year. So it becomes difficult to guess that from a week-to-week basis, both for your seasonal teams and trying to get into DFS tournaments. So applicable to both. But, you know, the one thing I would say, too, is that give me your thoughts, really, about tight ends, because there's some references here that trying to use a tight end in stacking isn't as successful as using a wide receiver or a pass-catching running back like Alvin Kamara.
So I think the kind of the tight end you can use in the stack, but the kind of takeaway for me was not to use 2 or more tight ends in the same game. And it's just not very often that 2 tight ends are going to go off. A lot of the times the value of the tight end is tied up, not so much in the catches and yardage, but it is if they find the end zone. And so I think that's kind of was the main takeaway for me. If you want to go with quarterback, wide receiver, tight end for, you know, obviously like a team like the Patriots, then that's going to be a viable strategy, but you probably don't want to get 2 tight ends in the same game in the same lineup.
Last one from me, Colin. You know, week one of the DFS season is so interesting because the prices come out well in advance, well before some of these training camp battles are decided, well before some of these injuries have hit, right? So you could really gain some efficiencies there. But the only issue is that everyone's going to be on some of those guys, right? Who are some of those guys for you? When I'm making lineups, I feel like I'm winding up with a lot of Peyton Barber. I'm winding up with a lot of Jordan Wilkins. I'm winding up with a lot of Kenny Stills. And I'm trying to figure out who the Jacksonville wide receiver might be. I mean, who are some guys in that vein who the pricing is just wrong because of things that have happened over the last few weeks?
Yeah, it's you know, a blessing and a curse that the site's released the pricing so early. It's nice because you kind of get excited. You can start to play around with things. And then, you know, we got our product out and ready really early. Rex Burkhead is one of the guys that stood out just because Sony Michel was a highly touted rookie. And he was, you know, originally going high in season-long drafts. And so he was kind of priced up. They figured he'd have some type of material role. Looks like if that's the case, it's not going to be the case until, you know, a little bit later in the season. He's going to need the practice time with Tom Brady before they kind of trust him on the field and pass protection and things like that. So a lot of those touches are going to go to Burkhead. Burkhead, especially on FanDuel, should be the goal line back for New England. And then you have James White in the passing game. So that was one of the guys that stood out. And then most recently, you kind of noted with the injury in Jacksonville to Marquise Lee, and that's going to open up some value. And it's just trying to figure out who it's going to be. So I think Keelan Cole is just $4,500 on FanDuel. Yep. And it's crazy. If you plug him in, you can do some absurd things. I mean, you could fit teams that have Alvin Kamara, David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, you know, basically whoever you want if you're willing to play Keelan Cole, and they got a matchup against the Giants. And so I think that's, you know, he's going to have to find the end zone to get there in tournaments, but I think he is insane value that you would be, you know, shouldn't pass up on cash games on FanDuel.
Dede Westbrook could be interesting there because Cole could conceivably get matched up with Janoris Jenkins a little bit, so maybe Dede Westbrook is an interesting pivot there. But again, there's a lot of guesswork right now going on with the Jaguars. I think they're as tough a team from a pass catching standpoint as is Philly at this point in the season.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And one of the things that we found throughout the years is wide receiver is sometimes the best place to make pivots. So if it does end up feeling like the whole industry is going towards Keelan Cole over Dede Westbrook, then you know, Westbrook's really cheap as well, right? He's $5,300 on FanDuel week one, and a lot of people were counting on Marquise Lee to kind of be the steady number one target. So if it feels like, you know, Cole's going to be 25% owned and it's just a little bit more to get to Dede Westbrook and he's going to be 5% owned, then those are the type of pivots that we're often looking to make in tournaments. And those are kind of all things you can toggle within our lineup optimizer.
So I was just about to throw that to you. Again, we're with Colin Drew on Twitter, at DrewB417. He writes for Daily Roto, and this is a free article on DailyRoto.com about NFL DFS stacking strategy. But to close it out, you're talking about your optimizer. It's a way for you to set up some rules, play around with it, set up some rules for stacking and other strategies in for DFS tournaments, correct?
Yeah, definitely come check us out. You can save 10% with the promo FNTSY, but the optimizer is revamped and repowered for this year, and I'm really excited about it. So if you're kind of a casual user, you can configure some basic stacking rules, like always pair your quarterback with a wide receiver for tournaments. But if you want to get more intricate, you can set up custom groups as well based on individual teams. So you can set up rules that, you know, kind of dictate how you want to pair people with Tom Brady. And then maybe for Philip Rivers, you set up your rules a little bit differently. Maybe for Russell Wilson, you only want him with Doug Baldwin. So there's a lot of customizability that you can play with in the optimizer. We're really excited about it this year.
Great stuff. That's Colin Drew. You can find him on Twitter at Drewby, D-R-E-W-B-Y 417. We'll talk to him throughout the year, but again, check out his article on DailyRoto.com. Colin, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again soon, and we'll be back on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're FST.
Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
Back on FST, and get your season ticket to Fantasy Glory now with the 2018 Roto Experts exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. It's not just a draft kit, it's a full season package that takes you from draft day to championship week. And it features in-depth analysis from some of your favorite fantasy sports radio experts, like Dave Martinez. Go to rotoexperts.com, use code WINNER to get 10% off on the exclusive Edge package, and set aside a spot on the mantle for that 2018 championship trophy. If you want to give us a call, phone lines are open, 844-843-6879. Thanks for listening to us on the Fantasy Sports Radio app, on TuneIn, on iHeartRadio. So, something that I often talk about, probably too much, and I remember a year that I was talking about and screaming from the rooftops, and that was 2014, and I was saying, do not draft rookie wide receivers.
That just was the wrong year to be talking about it,
Mike. I was wrong that year. I remember talking about it a lot that year, and I was wrong. But I'm right over time. And that's what we try to do here in the probability, predictability business that we're trying to do. So Evan Silva, who's a really well-renowned fantasy football expert, you find him on Twitter at Evan Silva. I've been in leagues with him. He and I go back and forth on Twitter from time to time. I think he really does a good job of putting out certain statistics. And the one he put out yesterday was close to my heart because I talk about it so much. And that's every first round he totaled. Every rookie wide receiver, that was drafted in the first round and their respective yardage totals from the last three seasons. Corey Davis, 375 yards. Mike Williams, 95. John Ross, 0. That's last year's. Year before, Corey Coleman, 413. Will Fuller, 635. Josh Doctson, 66. Laquon Treadwell, 15 yards. And Amari Cooper, 1,070 yards. So that's the first one where that's a big number. Will Fuller, 635, but I think we all know Will Fuller is a peaks and valleys type of guy. I'd have to go back to his game logs. I'd imagine that 635 was probably concentrated into just a few games. Forgive me if I'm wrong. I haven't checked that. Amari Cooper, 1,070. Kevin White, 0. Devontae Parker, 494. Nelson Aguilar, 283. Rashad Perriman, a big fat 0. And Philip Dorsett, 225. I remember really disliking the Perriman and Dorsett picks, and it has proven to be the case because one is hanging by a thread to stay with the Ravens. The other one has been traded to the Patriots as of last season. So my point in putting out all those stats, Dane, is that these rookie wide receivers rarely hit. If you go back to 2014, you can prove me wrong, but it is 1 year. And there were a bunch of guys. I think if I remember back correctly, there were 6 or 7 rookie wide receivers in 2014 that made the top 50 wideouts. It was an anomalous year. It was Odell Beckham and John Brown and a few other guys that whose names are escaping me right now. But in any
Beckham, event, Evans, Benjamin, Sammy Watkins, Jarvis Landry were all that year.
That's right. So, but the greater point is that drafting rookie wide receivers does not often pan out. There are going to be exceptions to that rule. But for those of you asking me, and I drafted Christian Kirk in one league, but I took him so late, he's like a fifth wideout, sixth wideout. But I'm just saying, you thinking you're smarter than the rest of the crowd and you're going to snag a rookie wide receiver and take Calvin Ridley before everybody else does, I'm just telling you, there's a lot to get done. There's a lot of route trees to learn. There's a lot of trying to get on the same page as a quarterback. There's a lot of trying to beat out a veteran that knows what he's doing. So it takes a lot for a rookie wide receiver to be impactful in fantasy football, and it usually isn't the case.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Blewett. I have been, you know, pounding the table on this network for the better part of 2 or 3 years, okay? I also say it's not only rookie wide receivers, it's rookie tight ends as well. And you made a great point. There's a lot to learn there, right? The college game is different from the pro game. You're learning a much different route tree where you were able to just use pure athleticism in college. That will not be the case in the NFL. You have to learn route running a little bit different, how to move your man off the spot. There's blocking you need to do. There's, you know, you talk about leapfrogging a veteran. You remember, Mike, me and the King Scott Angle having the conversation about Ridley and Mohamed Sanu. Now, I think Mohamed Sanu is a fairly nondescript guy, but Calvin Ridley, I don't know if in year one will hop them. I have similar concerns as you talked about with DJ Moore, Anthony Miller, Michael Gallup, and the rest, right? I saw something. This was over at 538. They do a lot of good analysis. They actually talked about the wide receiver position and the tight end position and like what part of their actual plateaued value do they achieve in years 1 and 2. And it's a huge jump that they make from year 1 to year 2 because they don't have all of this under their belt, shall we say. And the other thing I'll mention on this, I say it all the time, Mike, as it relates to offensive line play, the new CBA in the NFL, the collective bargaining agreement, has limited the amount of practice that people can have. And so it puts these rookies at an even greater disadvantage for this. The running back position is one where rookies can step in and make a difference. Example, Zeke Elliott. Example, Leonard Fournette. So we've seen that, but we don't see it with the pass catchers as much. The last thing I'll say on this, Blewett, is this stat I do think is important. I'm staying away from those rookie wide receivers, but what it also means, the inverse of that, is I really like year 2 wide receivers to take a step forward. Think about the way people think about Mike Williams this year. I think John Ross might actually be a viable number 2 for the Bengals, and everyone loving Corey Davis. So this, I think, is very true, very important. And the flip side of that is be ready for the second year jump for wide receivers as well.
Yeah, so here's your rookie wide receivers that got drafted this year. I'm looking at my dynasty draft, and I'll just take them in order of the way they went in my dynasty draft. Because in your dynasty drafts, in your keeper leagues, yeah, Mm-hmm. You got to look to target one of these guys. Calvin Ridley's going to be the number two in Atlanta and someday number one. I don't know how much longer Julio Jones is going to play. I'm not suggesting that he's right at the end of his career, but he does have chronic toe and foot issues. And it doesn't necessarily mean that Julio's going to be here for the next 5 years. So, yeah, Calvin Ridley is kind of a smart pick there. In fact, he went third off the board of these wide receivers. I found that a little surprising because I just think he's with a better quarterback and all that kind of stuff. But DJ Moore is the first guy off the board in Dynasty, in my Dynasty League. Now, DJ Moore, if everything went well for him, I don't want to do the injury thing, but if everything went well for him, he'd be fourth in targets in Carolina.
Right.
McCaffrey,
yeah.
Olsen,
I mean, behind Funchess. McCaffrey, behind Olsen, behind Funchess. And the other thing, listen, we don't talk about it as a target, but Cam is an option unto himself, especially by the goal line. Okay, so I think you have to consider that for Carolina as well, especially, you know, and you mentioned DJ Moore, the skill set may be there, but, you know, you got to consider the other options. And for this point, Blewett, I think you're right. I think rookie wide receivers are the guys that I look at in dynasty leagues later on, but I don't expect much for them in year two. In year one. So that being said, I actually look at two wide receivers who I don't expect anything in year one anyway because of the other guys that are there on that team, but I think the future could be bright with them because of the amazing skill set that they possess. I'm talking about in Denver, it's Cortland Sutton. I've told you about the contract status of DT and Manny Sanders, and then your guy in Pittsburgh, James Washington, people think are really high. I've heard commentary. Mike Tomlin says he thinks he's higher on Washington than he was on Juju last year. I think those are two guys that I'm going to target in my dynasty drafts because they are further down the board on most, and I'm not expecting anything from them in year one anyway, but I think both of these guys have bigger opportunity in year two. For me, it's Cortland Sutton and James Washington as the rookie wideouts that I like to target late in dynasty drafts.
Yeah, look, Dana and I took Christian Kirk in a draft the other day, but he was basically our fifth wide out. There's a path there for him to be opposite Larry Fitzgerald, and in three wide receiver sets, I could see an opportunity for Christian Kirk to play a good amount of snaps. That's why I like him more than DJ Moore. Calvin Ridley, we just talked about him. He's going to have to beat out Mohamed Sanu, but I think in three wide receiver sets, you'll see Ridley earlier than some of these other guys. Michael Gallup in Dallas, I think what you like about his opportunity there is that there isn't a ton of talent in that wide receiving core. But what you don't like is the fact that he could end up being third or fourth in targets on a team that's going to be an extremely low-volume passing team. At least if they're doing things the right way, they're going to be a low-volume passing team. Anthony Miller. Mm-hmm. The Bears brought in so many options with Allen Robinson and Trey Burton. They got Tariq Cohen there already. I mean, is Miller even going to be fifth in targets on that team?
Yeah, I don't know. He's another guy where I like the skill set, and he's flashed in camp. They really like him, right? But again, Chicago is shaping up with the potential to be another one of these fantasy herds. You talk about Allen Robinson. They like Trey Burton. You know Tariq Cohen is going to get his in the passing game. Jordan Howard, people think, is a volume running back. They also, listen, Mike, they also signed Tyler Gabriel in the offseason away from Atlanta. That's where Calvin Ridley is kind of going to play that role down in Atlanta. But all the more reason, you know, there was even a Kevin White sighting in Chicago last week in the preseason game. So I hear
that's right. Kevin White's going to make the team. There was a thought that they might move on from him, but he's probably going to make the team. So it's just another body and a talent to have to battle uphill against.
It's skill plus opportunity. I like the skill of Anthony Miller, not the opportunity. On the flip side, you mentioned Kirk, right? The opportunity may be there behind literally only Larry Fitzgerald. And, you know, Ricky Seals-Jones will get some opportunity in the passing game. And you mentioned Michael Gallup. You know, Gallup may be the one who pops because the rest of this Dallas wide receiving core, you know, kind of is bereft of dynamic playmakers, shall we say. You know, Hearns, Beasley, Williams, none of those guys really excite me. So maybe Gallup has a chance, but I agree with you on this overall point. Don't expect a rookie wide receiver to be relevant on a week-to-week basis for you in a redraft league.
Yeah, look, I think the guys for this year for me are Kirk, Ridley, and Washington, because I think the Steelers could run enough three wide receiver sets to make Washington valuable. But that being said, it's Brown, it's Schuster, it's Le'Veon Bell are all going to be in front of him in targets. The best chance he has without injury is to be fourth in targets. And I actually would guess that he would be fourth in targets. Probably him right in front of Vance McDonald, something along those lines. But the two rookie wide receivers that I drafted in my dynasty draft are Antonio Callaway and Simi Cobbs in Washington. I just think long-term, I feel better now about Callaway than Cobbs, but these are long-term picks. I am not the guy that has any expectations for them this year, so they'll probably spend the year on the practice squad, and then I can extract value from them in year two, potentially in year three. Callaway, obviously a lot of talent, but he's got to get his stuff together if he's going to be a part of the Browns long-term.
Yeah, and listen, if Josh Gordon is there and Jarvis Landry there, they're going to be the main dudes. And we've already talked about David the Njoku's on you as well. We know there's a pass-catching running back in a big committee. So I think Callaway has a long way to go before he's fantasy relevant.
Yeah, if some of your stash leagues for long-term, Deion Kane is out for the year with an ACL, but there could be stuff there with Andrew Luck and Deshaun Hamilton in Denver. Come back tomorrow. We'll talk more player props and another strategy when it comes to season-long fantasy football. We're out.